Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host today, Dave Allen, bringing you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. And there's a whole heck of a lot of political events. Oh, my goodness. It's Monday, July 16th, 2018. Good afternoon, Dave.
Happy Monday, Melody.
Hey, we have Greg Hunter is going to be our guest tomorrow with me and Butch Paul. So listeners out there, make sure you make it on your calendar. Mark us on the calendar for Greg Hunter tomorrow. I think he's tomorrow. Is he next week? I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen. He's next week, the 24th.
I call that anticipation.
Oh, I'll tell you. I tell you, that's what happens when you get old. But anyway, mark your calendar anyway. Mark them both days and then just be surprised when he does show up.
There
so,
you go.
Well, it was, you know, again, it was just a boring day in the metals. Very boring day in the metals. You have gold down, you know, a few cents today, $1,241. You have silver down 2 pennies at $1,587. Platinum was down $5 at $826, and palladium was the big downer of the day. It was down a little over 2%, down 20 at $922. The USDX today was a little weaker, down 0.22 at 94.48, with crude oil down another big 2.72, $2.72 at 68.29, so another big drop in oil. And let's take a look at the markets. The Dow was up 44 points at 25,064. The NASDAQ was down 20 at 7,805. And the S&P was also down 3 at 2,798. And let's see if there's any other interesting news in the markets. It was a hectic day here at Discount Gold and Silver. Everybody taking advantage of the lower prices for both gold and silver. They're great buying opportunities, because if you have a, what does my one co-host say? If you have a IQ higher than a bigger than a shoe size, you're going to understand that these are terrific buying opportunities at the prices at this level. So, and they certainly are, as I quote him. And let's see if there's anything else going on. You know, it's hard to say you know, why oil prices are suddenly tanking, maybe because of the rumors about the emergency action from the administration. You know, we saw the U.S. crude plunge 5% today. It did sink as low as 67.58. And the reversal has wiped out 9% from oil price in less than a week. And the U.S. oil closed at 74.11 a barrel on July 10th. So it is a good reminder of how quickly sentiment can swing. And, you know, I'm also referencing gold and silver. You know, we can see, we've seen $100 moves in gold before. We see big moves in silver before. And it just takes a little something that the markets aren't anticipating, or maybe the debt just really catches up. And, you know, voila, things change very quickly. And I do believe when we have the big, everybody talks about the reset, everybody talks about this, but, you know, nobody knows when it's going to happen. You just have to understand that it's going to happen. The debt is what's going to sink our economy. And things can be rosy now, but with the numbers that I see in the what our future faces, there's no way that the debt will be able to continue pushing this economy stronger. So just like around the world. So now's the chance, ladies and gentlemen. 800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. And I guess all eyes have been on Trump and Putin. This is one thing I didn't pay much attention to today. You know, mainly what I believe, it's all theatrics. Lord knows what was said in 2 hours, and we'll never know what was said in 2 hours, just like we'll never know what was truly said between, you know, the President Trump and Kim Jong-un. We'll never know in any of these private meetings what is said. And we just have to, I guess, have a little bit of faith that, you know, That something works out well, but certainly Finland, Helsinki, was the front and center on the world stage. It's been a big buildup for weeks now, as the president of the United States and the president of Putin and the president of Russia met, and again, we'll never really be sure what the details will hold. There's some interesting information about this international attention. I don't know how it plays into today's world, but it's interesting. Not since hosting the 1952 Summer Olympics has the daughter of the Baltic been the bullseye of international attention. Ironically, it's been those Olympics that served as the Soviet Union's debut. It was also the first appearance for the newly established People's Republic of China, as well as Israel and Indonesia. It also marked the return of Germany and Japan, both of which had been banned from participation in the first post-war games that were held in 1948. And in what could or could not end up having been a foreshadowing of the Trump-Putin summit here today, the U.S. won a narrow victory in the final medal count in 52, although the Soviets made a dubious counterclaim of victory because it used a different point system. That's what governments do, different point systems.
That's right, different strokes for different folks, you know. Whereas George Carlin's alter ego, Biff Barf, used to say back in the 70s, I call him the way I see him, and if I don't see him, I make him up. Well, whatever you call it, you know, the Helsinki meeting followed, you know, the tumultuous head-scratching week at the annual NATO summit in Brussels, Belgium. You know, in a Face the Nation interview on Sunday, President Trump said the European Union is a foe of the United States for what they do to us in trade, adding, that doesn't mean they are bad. Geez, talk about mixed signals. And when asked who the U.S.'s big foe globally is, Trump responded, well, I think we have a lot of foes. I think the European Union is a foe, what they do to us in trade. Now, you wouldn't think of the European Union, but they're a foe. Russia is a foe in certain respects. China is a foe economically. Certainly they are a foe. It doesn't mean they are bad. It doesn't mean anything. It means that they are competitive. Well, that's an interesting style of diplomacy. Longtime friends are foes, and longtime foes are simply competitors. Well, Melody, George Orwell is smiling from afar today. You know, the president's remarks dovetailed with comments from European Council President Donald Tusk, who later said that the U.S. and Europe were best friends. Whoever says we are foes is spreading fake news, he said. Melody, yes, we live in interesting times.
And see what I believe, and I mean, it's all designed to have this confusing message. And today's summit has come and gone despite a bipartisan call for Trump to cancel it after a grand jury last Friday indicted the 12 Russians for interfering in the 2016 U.S. presidential election. You had the Democratic leadership in the Senate and the House, alongside a growing list of other Democratic lawmakers who had called for him to abandon the meeting. And you know, of course you're going to hear the Democrats say they don't trust Trump. You know, I mean, they have failed yet to prove collusion. So, I mean, it's, you know, I don't know. I get mixed thoughts about this. And, you know, as far as I'm concerned, it's all beyond our control. So it's interesting. But, you know.
Well, how about Senator McCain? He's not a Democrat.
No, well, you know, he's he certainly is a high-profile Republican, but then again, he's probably not the best conservative Republican there is. But that's for a different story. That's for a different day. And he's very ill. So you know, when you're very ill, you know, just like when Ted Kennedy is, I don't think they should be making comments when they are as ill as they are. But anyway.
Well, if you told your friends at the neighborhood barbecue over the weekend that the president would reconsider and turn Air Force One around before hitting Finland airspace, your friends would probably still be laughing, whether it was with you or at you. Now, although no official agenda was released for the summit, several issues are out there for the taking, or at least for the talking. as the Trump administration and Putin regime now plan for follow-up. You know, first and foremost, nipping another arms race in the bud. You know, according to the Federation of American Scientists, there are over 15,000 nuclear warheads in the world today, enough to destroy the Earth several times over. And as our president made clear in his joint news conference with Putin earlier today, before the two leaders met one-on-one for a couple of hours, the U.S. and Russia control 90% of them. Russia has about 700,000 warheads, the U.S. 6,800. One option that Trump may have presented to Putin, or that you know, the staff may present to Putin's staff later on, is a new nuclear weapons agreement. The new START treaty, which is the current agreement, is slated to expire in just 3 years, in 2021.
You know, and I think that's what a lot of it is. I think a lot of it is all this media and all this attention, but I do think they probably do get to, you know, something like a New START treaty and so forth. I'd like to think so. You have America's top nuclear commander. He has warned of Russia's sprint to deploy the hypersonic weapons. It wasn't that long ago where President Putin had come out and said they now have these hypersonic weapons. And this is certainly a new breed of super high speed threats that the U.S. is currently unable to defend against. Air Force General John Hyten, he's commander of the U.S. Strategic Command, told the Senate Armed Services Committee in March that both Russia and China are aggressively pursuing hypersonic capabilities. Hyten's comments came weeks after the Russian leader touted his nation's hypersonic missiles, as I had mentioned, called Kinzhai, meaning dagger, as invincible, during a State of the Nation address. So the vision of Putin speaking in front of a projection showing a simulated strike on the U.S. was harrowing. I want to tell all those who have fueled the arms race over the last 15 years, sought to win unilateral advantages over Russia, introduced unlawful sanctions aimed to contain our country's development. You have failed to contain Russia, Putin had said during that address.
But how do you really feel, Vladimir? You know, of the six weapons Putin debuted in March, two of them reportedly will be ready for war by 2020. That's according to sources with direct knowledge of U.S. intelligence reports. In other words, the time to talk about this is now. Yeah, I remember the poignant insight of the late scientist Dr. Helen Caldicott, who said decades ago, a nuclear accident anywhere in the world is a nuclear accident everywhere in the world. You know, that her concern extends to a peaceful event like the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear reactor meltdown in 2011 is alarming enough. Extending it, however, to a nuclear bomb or two being detonated in an act of terror or war is just simply unthinkable. Now, second, Russia interference in our election. You know, as noted earlier, Trump has been pressed to be more forceful leading up to this summit today in addressing Russia's meddling in the 2016 U.S. election in his conversation with Putin. Predictably, in the joint press conference after today's meeting, Putin repeated his previous denials that Russia tried to influence the outcome of the 2016 presidential election. He also dismissed the findings presented in the latest charges brought against Russian intelligence operatives by special counsel Robert Mueller. Our president's response was, he asked where Hillary Clinton's computer is. Where's the server? He asked, from which over 30,000 emails were allegedly hacked. Melody.
Well, Putin asserted that the Russian state has never interfered, no internal American affairs, including election process. And you know what? If I remember correctly, Dave, I do believe even Trump had agreed with the intelligence agencies that there was interference.
Yeah, there was somewhere between March and now. I forget the exact context and location of those comments, but no, you're right. There was an admission of sorts.
Now, whether it had anything to do with the outcome, it remains to be seen, which I You know, I don't think so. But I mean, but this isn't the first time. I mean, that, you know, even the Democrats back in the 90s had asked the Russians for help in the elections. I mean, so they are making it a, but this is a little bit different this time around. And, you know, everyone questions the relationship between Trump and Putin. And there's been endless, you know, it's been the subject of endless controversy and speculation ever since he entered the office. I do have to question. I know he wanted, and again, ladies and gentlemen, I'm not, this is not negative Trump. It's just stating the facts. I do know that they turned him, President Trump, down for a building, for a Trump Tower in Russia. So you don't really know what that relationship is between the two gentlemen. Well, I'm not going to call them gentlemen, but the two presidents. And so we have Trump. He has vehemently denied all accusations of collusion, which they have yet to prove. But he's also baffled friends and foes alike with his frequent praise of this Russian leader. So despite a strong consensus across America's intelligence community that the Russians did indeed interfere in the 2016 election, of course, Trump casts doubts on that assessment. And he did say today he didn't see any reason why it would be Russia that did the meddling. He said both countries were to blame for the current state of the bilateral relationship. And it's not like the United States doesn't interfere with other elections. So it's, you know, it's, I don't know. Trump did announce that the U.S. and Russia would continue to collaborate on future cybersecurity. So, you know, it's, that's what bothers me. And you don't see it from either side. You know, they all say that there was Russia interfering with the election, but where is anyone doing anything about it? I can't remember who's supposed to control cybersecurity. Wasn't that supposed to be, the guy, the attorney in New York, the mayor, Mr. Mayor Giuliani, wasn't he supposed to be taking care of the cybersecurity? Wasn't he in charge of that by the administration? So,
no. Yeah, if he was, he certainly no longer is. I mean, I'm sure part of Dan Coates's, a big part of his job is overseeing, you know, what's going on in a number of different agencies and in that regard. And you know there's one I was talking with a friend about this over the weekend, and you know, we're reminiscing in a quaint kind of way back, you know, 60s 50s 60s and 70s. I mean, the U.S. in particular was extraordinarily adept at manipulating foreign elections. Mainly through, you know, assassination. Yeah. At least we can say now, well, cybersecurity, it's insidious and can do a lot of harm. But we're not killing people, right?
Not yet, or but it goes on. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, as this program goes on.
Nations have saw it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cedarstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cedarstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk CommonSenseRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Please visit our website at dgscoins.com and make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter. It's a great newsletter. Dave always puts a great article in there. I do post Doug Nolan in there. I think his vision of the granddaddy of all bubbles is the most accurate information. And of course, with these prices being as low as they are, we have our little packages, the 1/10 ounce American Gold Eagle, along with 21 ounce Silver Eagles. Give us a call at 800-375-4188. You know, I kind of want to, there's a lot to talk about this afternoon in addition to with the Russia, and we're going to kind of recap about the sanctions since 2014. Russia's had sanctions on them for its invasion and the ongoing war in Ukraine. So far, there's been over 10,000 people that have been killed. Some analysts say that Kiev's main concern is that President Trump will unilaterally recognize Russia's annexation of Crimea, effectively selling it out to the Kremlin. And, now there are the sanctions. Russia's been feeling the effect of the U.S. and European sanctions. And since 2014. So last August, President Trump signed into law the Countering America's Adversaries Through Sanctions Act, a bill overwhelmingly passed by Congress. And the president did call it seriously flawed, but he still did sign it. And there does seem to be sanctions going on everyone and everything that you can, if it moves, there's a sanction on it pretty much. Dave.
Well, you know, in March of this year, too, the U.S. sanctioned Russian entities involved in cyber hacking. A month later, it went after Russian elites when it sanctioned a total of 24 oligarchs and Russian government officials, as well as 12 entities owned by those oligarchs. That was in response to a multitude of Moscow's continuing misdeeds and abuses overseas. Unfortunately for Putin, as hard as he may ask Trump for sanctions relief, which wasn't part of their post-meeting press conference, removing them is no longer a Trump decision because of the act of Congress. You know, on the other hand, Trump could agree to take Putin's request back to Congress, but that's a virtual political no-go given the U.S. Midterm elections in November. Trump does have the power to not impose any new sanctions, and he does apparently want to lift the existing sanctions to improve relations with Putin and Russia. And according to some analysts anyway, that clarity is actually valuable for the Russian economy, since what causes damage is not so much particular sanction measures themselves, but lack of visibility in what additional sanctions might come on top of what's already there.
And we're going to briefly recap the other two topics most likely talked about will be Syria. It's kind of fallen under the radar. since April, when the U.S. had last crossed paths with Russia and Syria, as we and our allies have conducted retaliatory missile strikes against the regime of Assad. So Trump did call out Iran and Russia, and to Russia, asking what kind of nation wants to be associated with the mass murder of innocent men, women, and children. And hopefully someday we'll get along with Russia, maybe even Iran, but maybe not. In Trump style. In Trump style. Maybe we'll get along. Well, maybe not.
maybe not. You know. And last but not least, there's good old North Korea. You know, some foreign policy analysts saw Trump asking Putin to use Russia's economic influence over Kim Jong-un by maintaining their sanctions on the North. Putin imposed restrictions on North Korea to comply with UN Security Council resolution last fall, but Moscow has generally rejected more extreme efforts led by the U.S. to isolate Kim. So we will see. As you know, it all goes to show, politics sure does make strange bedfellows, Melody.
It certainly does. And we're going to talk a little bit about when Putin suggested that the U.S. and Russia actually regulate the oil prices. But first, we're going to talk about retail sales. And the U.S. retail sales rose solidly in June. And, of course, it was boosted by increases in purchases of motor vehicles and a range of other goods, cementing expectations for robust economic growth. And for the second quarter, the Commerce Department released this report today and said that retail sales increased 0.5% last month. So you have data for May was revised higher to show sales rising 1.3% instead of the previously reported 0.8% gain. May's rise in retail sales was the largest since 2017. Economists had polled Reuters, had forecast retail sales rising 0.5% in June. If you exclude automobiles, gasoline, building materials, and food services, retail sales were unchanged last month after an upwardly revised 0.8% in May. So these so-called core retail sales correspond most closely with the consumer spending component of the GDP, and the core retail sales were previously reported to have risen 0.5% in May. Dave?
Well, you know, given the upward revision of the May data, Melody, the unchanged reading in core retail sales last month likely doesn't change views that consumer spending accelerated last quarter. Now, consumer spending, which accounts for more than two-thirds of U.S. economic activity, breaks sharply in the January to March period, growing at its slowest pace in nearly 5 years. In addition to the solid retail sales data, a sharp narrowing of the trade deficit in April and May also bolstered expectations. Excuse me. Of a strong GDP reading in the second quarter. The government's going to publish its snapshot of second quarter GDP later this month. Melody.
All right. I got a little distracted from all that noise, so my apologies. I don't know if it went out, but we were having some kind of issues here. So, but you know, we had business inventories. The U.S. business inventories also rose steadily in May. The Commerce Department increased 0.4%. after an unrevised 0.3% in April. And so, you know, the rise in inventories in May, they are a key component of GDP. And, of course, it was kind of in line with the economists' expectations. So they increased in May, as reported in advance. The retail inventories increased in May. Motor vehicle inventories increased 0.9% in May. And let's see if there's any other interesting information. Not so much. Retail inventories, excluding autos, which go into the calculation of GDP, edged up 0.1% in May, as reported last month.
True. How true. Business sales also jumped 1.5% in May. That was the biggest gain since September 2017. That was after a more modest increase of 0.6% in April. Now, May's sales pace, it would take about 1.34 months for businesses to clear shelves. That was the smallest inventories to sale ratio since December 2014, and was down very slightly from April.
We know we're going to talk a little bit about the crude oil prices declining. I mentioned it a little bit in the beginning of the program, so we saw the losses continue today, and we talked a little bit about this on Friday, I believe it was, when Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin has said that crude importers may receive waivers to continue buying supplies from Iran, and that's despite the U.S. sanctions. So Mnuchin said that they wanted people to reduce oil purchases to zero, but in certain cases, if people can't do that overnight, we'll consider exceptions, he said. So Mnuchin also told the reporters the administration wants to avoid roiling global oil markets as it seeks to pressure Iran to make concessions on its nuclear program. And of course, we all know that we withdrew from the Iran nuclear deal.
Yeah, it's true. The Trump administration sent oil prices soaring about 3 weeks ago after a State Department official told reporters that the agency had been pushing Europeans to cut their oil purchases from Iran to zero by November 4th. That tougher-than-expected deadline raised concerns about shortages of oil at a time when supply and demand are finally balanced. The State Department later signaled some leeway on the policy, and then last week, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said the administration will consider granting sanctions relief to a handful of countries. You know, the Trump administration now appears to be moving towards the approach followed by his predecessor. When the Obama administration expanded sanctions on Iran, it allowed importers to continue buying Iranian crude as long as the purchasing country's overall imports fell by 20% every 6 months. Mnuchin said the State Department has the ability to issue waivers around significant reductions in the oil markets. That's something that Treasury and State will be doing.
You know, I think one of the biggest reasons or one of the top topics of this meeting in Helsinki will be about oil. And you have Russia and other oil producers that are going to try to raise output by 1 million barrels per day. Or more if shortages hit the market. And this was from Russian Energy Minister Alexander Novak. OPEC, you have Russia, and several other oil-producing nations had agreed last month to raise output to tame rising crude prices. And Russian President Putin suggested that Moscow and Washington could cooperate to soothe volatility in the oil market that has, of course, upended the industry in years. So we all know that Russia partnered with OPEC and other producer nations since 2017, and it manages nearly half of the world's oil supply. And the countries took action after crude prices sank to 12-year lows in 2016, piling pressure on oil-dependent economies and bankrupting hundreds of U.S. energy companies. So, you know, that's what it was all about, ladies and gentlemen. I mean, if you think it was anything else other than, you know, you know what they told us, it was all, you know, it was all to, you know, get control. And we have the United States where drillers compete in free market is not part of the deal. The U.S. laws prohibits companies from colluding to fix prices. And a bipartisan group of U.S. Congress members recently revived a push to punish OPEC for alleged price fixing.
OPEC Plus, as they're now calling it, with Russia in the loop. You know, still, despite what you just said, Melody, Putin suggested at the press conference with President Trump today that some form of cooperation is possible. Trump's demanded that OPEC tame fuel costs, led by Saudi Arabia and Russia. The two dozen producer nations last month agreed to hike output to offset falling output in Venezuela, as well as the U.S. Sanctions that are looming on Iran, which is the world's fifth largest oil producers. Consumers around the world, as well as U.S. shale producers, suffer from price swings, Putin said. Well, how magnanimous. Those shale drillers have used new technologies like hydraulic fracturing to push U.S. oil and gas production to all-time highs. U.S. is already the biggest natural gas producer, now is poised to top Russia as the global leader in oil output. You know, last week you might remember that Trump criticized Germany for allowing its companies to expand a natural gas pipeline with Russia. The so-called Nord Stream 2 line is controversial because it allows Moscow to bypass existing infrastructure in Ukraine to reach the lucrative Western European market. And well, that's a no-no.
Of course, Russia is going to use its position as Europe's biggest gas supplier as a tool of political pressure, as they have in the past. The administration, the Trump administration, they have sought to crack into the European gas market by pitching exports of U.S. liquefied natural gas, a version of the fossil fuel superchilled to its liquid form for export by sea. So the cost of LNG is significantly higher for European buyers than gas piped in from Russia. And Putin had said he reassured Trump that Russia will continue to ship natural gas through Ukraine after Nord Stream 2 is complete. So Moscow is ready to extend a natural gas shipping contract that expires next year pending a dispute between Russia's Gazprom and Ukraine's Naftogaz. I'm sure that's not correct the way I said it, but...
sounds good to
sounds
me.
Sounds good to you. An arbitration court on Stockholm earlier this year ordered Gazprom to pay Naftogaz a net $2.56 billion, saying that the Russian gas giant did not fully utilize Ukraine's pipeline system to deliver supplies to Europe as contracted. Gazprom has appealed the decision. So this is what it's all coming down to. And it's going to be interesting, to see these countries position themselves to see who can deliver, all these supplies. But we can't forget that OPEC, that the Saudis still sell oil in the petrodollar. So,
yes.
And so it all comes back to that, ladies and gentlemen. And I think this is why the big push. I mean, maybe this is, we always talked and often talked about monetary wars. We talked about nuclear wars. And to some degree, this would be a monetary war. But this is oil war. This is oil war. And because of the dollar being tied as a reserve currency, so
yeah, it'd be interesting. It raises questions about who's trying to play whom against whom.
Yeah, and I hear the music playing, telling us it's time for a break. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and I'm here with Dave Allen. You're listening to Financial Survival, and we'll be right back right after these few short messages.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today. today, complete with two Black Berkey Elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 800-375-4188. You know, a little discussion is spent on the bond market, and a trend in the bond market that has a long history of foreboding accuracy has kindled talk of a recession. We talk about it here on this program. It could be a long conversation. Current conditions suggest there's little danger of a significant economic downturn. Consumers and business owners are confident. Corporate profits are soaring. And I have a bridge for you in Florida if you care to buy one. But the unemployment rate is headed toward the lowest level since the mid-20th century, at least measured, and this is the problem measured by the government. One danger hangs out there, the ever-growing possibility that the two-year Treasury note yield soon could be higher than its 10-year counterpart. And, of course, we've talked about this on the program many times before, and it's worth repeating. That's a condition known as an inverted yield curve, which has accurately predicted each of the last seven recessions, including the devastating one that began in 2007.
Yeah, in Monday's trading, the spread was just 26 basis points. That's 0.26 percentage points, and was near the lowest since July 2005. Now, we'll talk around Wall Street has increased. That's only a matter of time before the curve actually inverts, sending the 2 year higher than the 10 year. You know, markets have held up fairly well during this yield compression, and some economists think recession fears are premature. Others, however, don't. They think that while the recession may not be imminent, it's certainly, you know, there's so many signs that already point toward it that it won't take a whole lot of more bad news to send us spiraling quickly in that direction. Now, you know, typically, as we've reported, an inverted yield curve leads to a recession by between 9 months and a year. Assuming the inversion happens over the next several months, its impact, you know, at the least, you know, is likely to be laid a little bit. The Cleveland Federal Reserve's most recent analysis, for example, in June, when they looked at the rate curve projections, indicated just a 15% chance of a recession over the next year. Now, well, that's inched up from 13% in May. They still say the yield curve is, you know, optimistic about the recovery, the stock market recovery continuing, even if it is somewhat pessimistic with regard to the pace of growth over the next year. Now, how dependable the Fed is? Well, as they've led us into the last seven recessions, you'll have to be the judge of that, Melody.
Well, you know, everyone's concerned about the Fed's desire to continue raising interest rates. They talk about the tightening labor market, building inflation pressures. And it does have some of these so-called experts convinced that a downturn is coming. Well, a downturn is coming. You have Bond King Jeffrey Gundlach, for instance. He said that we're getting closer to a recession, and the yield curve is flashing yellow. And it does need to be respected. They know it. It's just the people, it's just the rest of the world that doesn't know it. You have a Goldman Sachs analysis acknowledges some dangers to the economy, particularly from overshoots of gains in the job market. But they also talk about the positives outweighing the negatives and
blah, blah, blah.
I know.
You know.
Buy stocks and be done with it.
Jeez.
But What does happen when the markets turn and you have all these multinational corporations holding, you know, billions of dollars of their own shares?
How about it?
And it's all purchased by debt.
We're going to be running for the hills fast.
You'd think nobody.
I kind of know, don't you?
Yeah, I think so.
Well, you know, it's hard to say. I mean, the Fed's indicating that, you know, it's going to continue to raise rates, tighten policy, something it would not do if it was anticipating, you know, a substantial slowdown in growth, particularly a recession. Of course, all that could change if the Fed is wrong, as it consistently has been over the years, especially with its economic expectations. But economists are urging caution in overestimating the likelihood of a recession. We say here at Discount Gold and Silver, pay close attention to it. You know, here's a case where, you know, ignorance is not bliss. Not knowing can hurt you, especially if you're sitting on a chunk of cash that you want to use to buy gold or silver. If you wait too late and there's a sudden surge that begins the return of the next gold rush, you're going to be, you know, it's never too late, because you can always count on it and be on the precious metals of being a safe haven, particularly in times of economic and geopolitical uncertainty. But from an investment standpoint, you know, buying low, selling high, etc., you know, now isn't, you can't find a much better time than now to get in. Melody, what do you think about that?
Well, absolutely. And, you know, people say, you know, I want to get in now. It's better to buy low, sell high. But, you know, when things are beginning to unwind, and when the resets happen, if gold is $3,000, $5,000, that might be a cheap price to get in. So, yeah. You know, people focus too much on the price, and that you should focus on what it does to preserve your purchasing power. You know, and how important gold and silver is in the world during, you know, these financial difficulties. And do you think fighting and we see these countries trying to divvy up the oil, and everyone is trying to, you know, get ahead to help their own countries? I mean, even President Trump says that the other leaders need to do what they have to do for their own countries. Well, that means they're going to go out and fight for the, you know, to position themselves and to get the biggest leads in the oil and you know, everything else. So it's, you know, for trade, they're all going to fight for their trades, you know. And sure, a lot of these trade agreements are bad. That, you know, the trade agreements with Europe might not be the best, wasn't the best for us. But to call them a foe because of that, no, go in and change the trade agreement, rewrite it. Brexit. You know, there's talk that May's not going to allow the Brexit to happen. Well, you know what? That's wrong. That's what the people wanted. You know, so again, we might see more of an impact from the Brexit not happening than if it actually did happen, because everybody thought the world was going to come falling down when the people voted to get England out of the European Union. But now that everybody's been programmed thinking that it's going to happen, what's going to happen if it doesn't? So a lot of volatility out there, ladies and gentlemen. And, of course, it all involves trade. It all involves the U.S. dollar. It all involves oil. And so very interesting times, but get protected. Gold and silver, 800-375-4188. You know, last week, and there's so much more to talk about. We want to talk about the tight housing market. We want to talk, Ron Paul is talking about the stock market as the biggest bubble.
Why don't we go straight there to the tight housing market, Melody?
Well, I'd like to talk a little bit about, we always have the brevities, golden, and there is one in there that I think is kind of interesting. And it is, according to the University of Chicago, Dave, their researchers, owning an iPhone is the most reliable indicator of whether someone is rich.
Yeah, I'd like to see those data and that analysis. You know, the University of Chicago researchers wrote in their report, across all years in our data, no individual brand is as predictive of being high income as owning an Apple iPhone, at least, you know, beginning in 2016. Now, interestingly, previous brands that occupied this dubious role were, in 2004, Land O'Lakes Butter. And before that, Grey Poupon Dijon Mustard. Pardon me, Melody, I have a Samsung Galaxy. Do you have any iPhone? And that is this week's Brevity is Golden.
Well, there's only one thing I have to say, Dave.
What?
You have to improve on your accents. You have to practice a little more on that Frenchy accent.
Yes. I've never been called Frenchy in my life.
But that is interesting that it was the Land of Lakes and the Grey Poupon that was an indicator.
Yeah, I guess that was, there must have been, you know, the University of Chicago, they were looking at probably...
So they got to be right.
statistically significant numbers there. It's a head-scratcher, but it's you know, fascinating.
So if you use Land of Lakes butter now, and you use Grey Poupon, and you have an iPhone...
Oh, man. You're sitting on a pot of gold. Literally.
You must be Jeff Bezos.
Oh, man. Oh, jeez.
As
go.
He now has, what, $150 billion I saw today?
He's more than Billy Gates.
But the most competitive title, let's talk about the housing market. Oh, Dave, did you say, and that's this week's Brevity is Golden? Did you say that?
I did.
You did? All right. I was concentrating on that accent.
Sorry I distracted you.
Let's talk a little bit about the housing market and the most competitive, the tightest housing market in decades may finally be loosening its grip, and that could put pressure on overheated home prices. I don't know. I can't. The supply of homes for sale in the second quarter of 2018, the all-important spring market, rose at 3 times the rate at the same period in 2017. I just find that hard to believe, but the inventory jump was the largest quarterly improvement in 3 years and could be signaling a slight thaw in today's housing market, but it is just a start. The supply of homes for sale is still down 5.3% compared with a year ago. Still, all real estate is local, and some markets are seeing greater relief. 30 of the nation's 100 largest cities, including New York City, Miami, Los Angeles, now have more supply than a year ago.
Well, you know, the increase is a double-edged sword. I mean, supplies are increasing because sales are slowing. And sales are slowing because prices are so high. You know, in New York City, the median household has to spend almost 2/3 of its income to buy a home. In LA, it takes almost 60%. You know, that's why many millennials can't buy homes. Historically, price lags sales by a few months, and sales have been slowing this year in most major markets. This housing cycle, however, so far has been unique. The drop in sales is due to the tight supply, and that just pushes prices higher, period. The tight supply is due to very high demand and still below normal construction. That comes as the market continues to recover from the worst housing crash in history almost a decade ago. This other stuff is not so consequential.
But, you know, we have the home builders. They're slowly ramping up production, and they're doing so largely in the move-up and luxury market. And, again, there really is no affordable housing in this country. Again, you have the luxury market that's being built. Sales of newly built homes have been rising. Southern California did ease the inventory shortage somewhat, but not enough. You have new home sales continue to run well below historically normal levels, with sales through May of this year 37% below the average. Yeah, let's go ahead and move on to we got about 2 minutes. Maybe we can talk a little bit more about Ron Paul, and he's talking about how if you look to the stock market, you'd assume Wall Street was doing just fine. The S&P market came back to March highs. The Dow is back to positive for 2018. The NASDAQ hit fresh records. It's all built on shaky foundations. This is what we've been telling you, ladies and gentlemen. Now, former Congressman Ron Paul is saying the same thing. This market is the biggest bubble in the history of mankind. And when it bursts, it could cut the stock market in half. The biggest bubble in the history of mankind. And you think that the stock market is just going to drop in half? I see. You know, if you got the biggest bubble in history of mankind, wouldn't you think it'd be a little more than 50%? But cut in half. But he can see trouble ahead, and it originates with too much debt, too much spending. And this isn't the first time that Paul has made such dire warnings. In 2017, he predicted a 50% drop in the market, a call that he has doubled down on the number of times since then. And since that appearance, the S&P has rallied quite a bit.
Yeah, it's true. We have a president and a Congress who like to spend. They're not concerned, not just this, not just the current. We can go back to the early 60s, really, forgetting the mid-90s. Pay attention, folks. There's a lot of information to miss.
And we're going to miss you, listeners, as we end the program today. 1-800-375-4188. We'll be back tomorrow. Until then, be safe, good night, and God bless. Thank you, Dave.
Bye-bye.